G'day everyone, welcome back to the show, and today's guest is Michael Vogt. How you going, mate?
Great, mate.
Thank you for being on the show. I met you lately when we were in Colorado visiting the Romanex, and we had you on a couple of shows back with Lisa and Stan. I wish, as I said before, we had more time together, but you've had some stuff go on. You've experienced stuff with the Romanex. You had sort of an interest in this field way before, you know, living with them as well. And there was an incident that you were able to talk to your grandfather about, the 1942 Battle of LA, basically, what it's real known for by that term, by that name. Do you want to tell people, the viewers and listeners, just a little bit about yourself, and we'll sort of take it from there?
So, in short, you know, my interest began roughly 10 years ago. There was a news report on the local news station about a man in my home state of Oklahoma who literally had a UFO, a recurring UFO sighting in his backyard for several nights, and he had some great footage. And so one TV station went down there and they aired it. And I had a friend at the time who was interested in UFOs. I had no interest in it. I had more interest in poking fun at him. But I suddenly had this interest, and for whatever reason, I recorded the rerun of the broadcast. I was fascinated that something like this could happen in my, you know, my home state. So I called the guy the next day. I looked him up and spoke to him for well over an hour, and I was just instantly fascinated. I couldn't believe it. He was so happy to have anybody to talk to. He said no one else had contacted him, and so my interest began there, and from there I looked for UFO meetups, wanted to get to know a little bit more about the subject, read all the books I could read, watched every documentary I could find, and kind of did the whole UFO 101 thing, you know, more interested in photos and video footage. I've moved beyond that now, but, you know, and then on to my grandfather. I did come across the infamous Battle of Los Angeles in 1942, and I thought, well, my parents are from Los Angeles, maybe, and Grandpa still lived in the same house for over 70 years. I'll ask Grandpa. So the next time I saw him, I sat down with him, and I asked him if he remembered, I didn't call it a UFO, but I asked him, you know, about this Army shooting something, and didn't give him much information, just kind of wanted to see what he said. And for the viewers, you know, if you'd like to see my interview with my grandfather, they can go to YouTube and type Battle of Los Angeles Grandpa, and it should come up at the top. There's not really much to it. He did say, you know, the neighbors came over in the middle of the night, knocked on the door, said, you know, hey, there's a blackout. This was right after Pearl Harbor attack. So the city was on edge. They did black out the city. But he said, yeah, he and the neighbors stood out in the driveway, and they watched the lights converge on this object. You know, and as it moved, one light would go out, and the other would come on, and so on. And they shot, you know, as he says, different guns. But he didn't really have much to say about it. I think he said something to the effect that there were so many lights converging on this object that you really couldn't make out any definition. So that's where he left it. But I was fascinated that, you know, my own grandfather was witness to one of the, you know, the most popular sightings, I should say.
It's very fascinating, too, to the description, because if you look at Bruce Maccabee, the photo that he analyzes, there's a shitload of beams hitting this one object, basically describing what you just said as well. Right. And you can't make much out. You can sort of make out, you know, whether it's a disc or, you know, there's an object sort of, you know, circular, you know, stretched out. But it's just interesting, because I doubt he would have done a lot of research on the internet and all that, you know what I mean? To be able to just say, well, there was a heap of beams hitting this object, that's pretty much spot on what, you know, we can see from the photographic evidence.
Right, right. Yeah, it was fascinating. I pulled up a few websites and sat the laptop in my grandfather's lap, and he was just scrolling, fascinated, you know, to see these images again. But again, he didn't have much to say. I did get a chance to ask him what his thoughts were, and he just said he was pretty sure that we were not alone in the universe, but that's about where he left it, and it didn't seem like he wanted to discuss it anymore.
Well, that's what's been fascinating talking to you, and this is why I love people like yourself, and it shows that you're grounded, is because you still don't know what, you know, people like myself or Stan or whoever are interacting with, because you don't know. And this is where I find that great, because it's skepticism at the point that I like it, which is you look at the evidence and weigh it up on what you've experienced and what you find tangible and you can get your hands on. as you said, something strange is going on and you've experienced it, but what's behind it? And this is where, you know, some people would get it carried away and go, it's ET or whatever. But this is the problem with society's blind belief. And this is why it's great talking to people like yourself, because if you don't know, you're willing to go, look, this is freaking strange, but I can't say it's this because I haven't experienced or seen one of the fellas. So this is why it's great. What's some of the tangible, I guess, evidence or events and cases that you've researched that you have found fascinating on your journey into all this?
Wow. Well, obviously the Romac case, you know, after 5 years of research, I had come across the Billy Meyer case, which I still find compelling. I have questions about it, but it's hard to punch a hole in some aspects of it. Mm-hmm. The Dr. Reed, Dr. Rutter case, I stumbled upon that a few years ago. And same thing, it's hard to punch a hole. It's bizarre, as most of these cases are. You know, I could go on, but yeah, the Billy Meyer case, you know, the classics, the Betty Barney Hill case, you know, very compelling. Phil Schneider, you know, didn't relate to UFOs so much as just an ET encounter, but very, very convincing. It might be easier to list the cases that I don't find compelling, but those are, would definitely be at the top.
Definitely. Well, that's the thing. Like, we even talked about the Billy Meyer thing. I definitely think something happened with Billy, but the later on years, as I talked about, and I've mentioned on the show before, it just seems, you know, something crazy's gone on where I believe the earlier stuff, but something's gone on later. And these are things where, you know, you've got to keep grounded in this. And that's what was great talking about you guys, talking to you guys and Stan and Lisa, is because, you know, people do lose their shit every now and then because you get so obsessed by it and you're living it that you've got to be able to keep grounded, which is why it's great having certain people in your life that can sort of keep you grounded, because the experiences are that far out that, you know, everything could become a conspiracy if you don't sort of keep your stuff together. So
it's amazing that they've kept it together so well. I mean, they're Stan and Lisa are great for each other. Lisa's such a rock of support in all this. And this is no compliment to myself, but that Stan and Lisa definitely have a wonderful group of friends. I don't know how they would get along with that. I mean, the stress is overwhelming. I mean, between the contact itself, the paranormal, but then you have the harassment, the break-ins, the hacking. It's very stressful, and now with the legal issues, it's a wonder that someone like Stan could hold it together through all this.
Oh, definitely, and it's, you know, even for myself, it's not at that intensity, but it's still, it's very hard to keep together and, again, keep a balance, and I've been lucky to have Sorita in my life now. With you entering the picture here in terms of, you've gone from somebody that's researched, had an interest, and now you've sort of become part of, you know, this reality in terms of you've experienced some things. Are you able to go into some of the stuff you've experienced personally in terms of high strangeness and stuff you've experienced at the Romanex and in your life now?
Absolutely, absolutely. I think the best place to start is at the beginning. When I heard, when I came across Stan's story, I decided I have to go see this for myself. This is just too much, and Colorado's not that far away. So I looked on his website, and sure enough, he was speaking, you know, 13, 14 hours away from me at the time. And went out to see this. There was a little conference out in South Central Colorado. And long story short, the first night I met them, a UFO, a black sphere, about the size of a soccer ball, flew, you know, on arm's reach right in front of my face as I was sitting next to Stan talking. I was already pretty well convinced of his story, but that, you know, they say seeing is believing, and certainly made a believer out of me. Moving in last year, it was a couple weeks in before the paranormal activity began. I was kind of hoping, you know, to kind of see what they were experiencing for myself. But yeah, it took a few weeks. And, you know, as I mentioned in the past interview, they like to tip the chairs over for whatever reason. You know, the stools where we were seated in the kitchen primarily. And as I mentioned before, the timing of the activity, it's not about the activity itself. It's like they wait just for the right moment. Whoever this is, you know, they want to be seen and they want you to know that they're there. So yeah, 2 weeks in, I opened the door to come into the kitchen from the backyard, and one of the stools just tipped right over in front of me. So it happened again weeks later. Weeks after that, it was one of those folding tables down in the living area. Just, you know, tipped over on its own. And then, you know, the stories go on and on, from banging sounds, I mean, loud banging sounds, to growls, to things going missing and then returning mysterious later. There's so many. I'm kind of scrolling through all these events in my mind, but those are probably some of the most notable. And the activity seems to increase when we have guests, as you were witness. And then we'll have weeks where it's very quiet. So it does come in waves, but the water faucets will turn on. Here recently, you know, we have the shadow beams in the house, messages coming off the printer, flashes of light, one of which destroyed four clocks in the house. That one's a mystery. I mean, you know, out of all the things that have happened in the house, it's like, why the clocks? They literally destroyed the clocks, and they had to be replaced.
So can you go into that? Wasn't it something like there was a flash of light or something happened, and then all of a sudden, about 20 minutes later or something, Stan's gone to check the time, and for whatever reason, like, the time wasn't right, so he's checked, or it stopped, the thing wasn't ticking.
Right.
And then he's checked another clock, and I think there was another couple of clocks, and all of them were basically frozen.
Yeah, and they were all analog clocks. There is a clock in their bedroom, which is digital, and it displays, it projects the time on the ceiling. The projector part, portion of the clock, burnt out. The clock still worked, but not the projector. But the three analog clocks in the house, one in the bathroom, kitchen, and living room, were just destroyed. And we looked through them, didn't see much of anything. You know, they all have a. You know, I thought about it. I said, what do analog clocks that have that other, you know, electronic devices in the house have that I don't have? I thought about it. It's like quartz. But I would imagine there's a lot of quartz in other electronics. We still haven't gotten to the bottom of that one. It's not really worth my time. It is interesting, and for whatever reason, it perhaps there's a good reason behind it. We don't know.
Maybe this has got something to do with the message of time.
You know, I wish they would, whoever it is would be a little more clear with these things. And it could have been, it's happened in the past where electronics have been damaged inadvertently, but more often than not, it was deliberate. And if you're familiar with the Romanek case, destroying electronics seems to be a common theme.
Even things like in the past, there's been there was an implant that they've put inside, like, I think a glass sort of test tube type of thing. And right. From a frequency, that thing shattered as well. And there's lots of things that get burnt out or melted. Even the stuff where I think he was given antidepressants or something a few years ago, and then every time we went to go and have them or something, the container was basically melted to the table or wherever it was.
I believe it was in the medicine cabinet before he ever even got a chance to take it. If I recall correctly, that medicine bottle was melted inside the medicine cabinet, and you could see burn marks where something had entered in, melted this, you know, medicine bottle, and then exited, and then in the process actually melted a hairbrush, I believe.
It is fascinating why they've done that. Who knows? You know, it's probably got something to do with that he shouldn't be taking that he doesn't need it. But it's just interesting how these things are done. And like, even with the sighting board, I can remember there was an incident where, whether it was a ball of light or a craft, who knows, it goes near the camera, and all of a sudden, basically, the molecular structure of the sighting board of the weatherboard home has been basically burnt, but it's like being cleaned by heat, but hasn't, you know, it's been affected in such a way that's impossible, you know, to explain. And things like meteorite dust found in little crop circles in the backyard, and little things like that, and even an unknown type protein that's equivalent to sort of in vitro with, you know, the substance found on a dress type thing that he woke up one time in.
Oh, so, right. The sticky... sticky nightgown.
Yeah, incident. Yeah. Have you experienced waking up to him naked outside or anything like Lisa has?
No, and I'm glad you brought that up, because you know, it was the Thursday before Valentine's Day, so this would have been early February of this year. Stan and I are usually the first to awake in the morning, and I came down, and Stan had that deer in headlights look, you know, like something had happened. This is classic when something happens. You can just tell. And he said, it's the strangest thing. He said, I woke up, you know, late last night in the living room. He said, and Lisa was guiding me up to bed. He said, I don't know how I got down there. And this was all right after he had had an MRI for a lump over his liver, presumed to be from this assault that he incurred months prior. But he was set to have a second MRI here in Colorado before they scheduled surgery to remove it. And so, you know, I didn't think much of it. I just thought, well, this is certainly strange, but I didn't jump to conclusions. And then later on that morning, you know, Stan felt a lump just under his rib cage. And we looked at it, and it was an incision just under the rib cage. It was a barbell shape, you know, two balls on the end, probably a quarter inch wide, maybe 3 inches in length. And I knew immediately what had happened just based on past experience. You know, with his torn ACL, he woke up one morning, his ACL was repaired, had 5 puncture wounds behind his leg. Stan, still, after all these years, still has difficulty, you know, processing and accepting these things to be true. You would think, you know, you would just get used to it. You don't. And so he was a little freaked out and just kept going on and on about it. You know, what is this? What is this? And Stan, you know damn well what this is. And as I said before, Lisa's kind of the rock in all of this, you know. So she said, I said, Stan, you should probably go get the black light. Those are who are familiar with these kinds of events, you know, incisions, even with cattle mutilations, fluorescence under black light is a common theme. And Stan just kept going on and on, and finally Lisa said, Stan, listen to Michael, go get the black light. So we climbed up in the attic, and with all the Halloween decorations, and got a black light out. I remember Stan standing outside the bathroom, just like, oh, my heart's racing, you know. He just didn't want to believe it was true, you know. He hadn't been taken, for lack of a better term, in quite some time that he knows of. And so this was a little rough on him. And so sure enough, flipped the light off, turned the black light on, and that incision glowed bright green. And then right northeast, south, and west of the incision were 4 fluorescent orange dots, we'll say, that we couldn't see with the naked eye. After everything that I've read and everything that he's been through, I just knew. I said, Stan, you don't need surgery, you know. So it was kind of a blessing. He's still, you know, rather rattled about it. And they went in for the MRI. I believe it was later that day, as a matter of fact. And took a few days for the results to come back. And when the results came back, it literally said, what did it say? Markedly improved. But basically, that tumor, that lump that was above his liver was gone.
And I've seen just so the viewers and listeners know, I've actually seen the mark, you know, on him. I've seen the photo of it under the black light and the pricks of orange, like you're saying. So, and it, you know, so I knew as soon as you brought it up with him, I'm just like, you're healed, aren't you? And he's just like, you can tell his resistance, and I think that's why he gets his ass kicked in his experiences in terms of them being so full on, because he needs something like that to go, yes, this is still real, this is what's going on, you know, you're not losing it. Because, and at the same time, it's healthy skepticism on his part. He's, you know, he's asking him, you know, what's going on. He's not getting an answer, but he's getting enough evidence and tangible things to go, well, there's scientific evidence, there's witnesses, you know, there's a whole sort of gamut to his experiences.
Sure. Yeah, he's not one to jump to conclusions. He's actually still has such a hard time with it. His mind immediately goes to the rational explanation. Oh, you know, the chair tipping over. Oh, it could have been the cat. It's like the cat's like in the other room on the couch where it always is. You know, whatever it is, but this was undeniable. And you know, what's fascinating about that incision was, you know, day one, there was no inflammation. Not one drop of blood, no scabbing, no nothing. It was glossy, you know, and he had me feel it. I mean, this incision went deep down in past, you know, the skin level. It was, whatever it was thick. And, yeah, like I said, I just knew he wasn't going to need surgery, so that was a relief for everyone. But yeah, when these things happen, we don't, nobody in the house jumps to conclusions. It's like, okay, let's rule out the more logical explanations first. And then when nothing's left, it's like, okay, you know, objects don't just fly across the room on their own accord.
Yeah, exactly. What's been some of the other things that are similar in terms of intenseness and what you've seen and experienced in the house like that? Like, we can go into, like, you and me, and I think Stan and Sol were sitting down having a conversation, and it was basically you were saying something like you just wished that they were here, or you knew that they were here listening and watching us. And
right.
All of a sudden, Stan seen the flash, and I'll let you go on with what happened after that.
Sure, sure. Yeah, that was interesting. You know, as I mentioned, we've had, I say we, but they've received messages off the printer. That seems to be the, this is my opinion, the a newer, more reliable method of communication, because the phone calls are just, you know, they don't know what to believe when they receive these electronic phone calls. So there was a, what I would call a starseed letter that came off the printer a little over a month ago now. It was followed by a brief message that just said, please know that we've never left you. So that was kind of reassuring. But again, Stan and Lisa both, they don't jump to conclusions. They have to rule out the obvious, like maybe hackers. And I pointed out, okay, I suppose it's possible somebody who knows what they're doing could very easily take control of a wireless printer and print off whatever. I wouldn't think that they would write such, you know, flowery, you know, messages of support. But let's see, weeks, probably a week or two later, I was discussing my girlfriend's book, and then we went on to talk about Lisa's book. And there was a message that came off the printer regarding Lisa's book, you know, encouraging Stan and Lisa to, you know, promote it a little bit better. So that was interesting, and that's where you came in, and I mentioned that message, and I said, it seems to me the house is being monitored 24/7. It's almost as if somebody or something is listening at every moment. And then, as you saw, you know, Stan was the one facing the basement, and there was a flash of light coming from the basement, and, you know, like I said, like a trained monkey, I just thought, well, here comes another message. Went downstairs, and, you know, you think you get used to some of these things, but I remember going down the stairs and just thinking, oh, please don't be a message. Please don't be a message. I can, you know, the goosebumps coming off my skin. And sure enough, there was just one line there. It just said, yes, Michael, we are watching and listening. it was comforting, but in a creepy way.
Creepy,
you know?
Way.
It's like, it's nice. Yeah, oh, sure. It's nice to know that, you know, Stan's being looked out for, but at the same time, it's like, oh, wonderful, we're being watched at every moment.
How's it affected you being there? Like, obviously you've got a, you know, a tight relationship with the Romaneks, but how's it affected you, your perception on reality, even more so than what it was before living with them, with some of the experiences and things you've seen there?
The best way I can put it is it's pretty much pried my mind wide open. Things that I didn't previously believe could be possible. You know, like I said, seeing is believing, but it's really not. It's a matter of knowing. It's a matter of certainty. It's wow, you know, these things really do happen. I can't say what it is, who it is. I can't even say it's ET at this point. I'm not going to go there. But, yeah, eye-opening experience for sure. I wouldn't say earth-shattering. It's not like my whole life has changed, but it really has opened me up to other possibilities. You know, the meditation incident just over a month ago, 6 weeks ago now, you know, Stan finally sat down to meditate at the encouragement of friends and others, we'll say. And so I was very happy for him. And then within minutes of him sitting down in his bed and meditating, you know, suddenly he's screaming his head off. You know, in short, he literally caught his hand on fire. I never would have believed it until I saw it myself, but he burned it. You know, burned a handprint right into the pillow, burned his shorts. So by the time Lisa and I got up to the bedroom where he was meditating, and Stan's running around screaming, his hands are red hot, the hair's burned off of his arms, the whole room smells like burnt hair and burnt shit. I don't know what it was. It was an awful smell. And so you know, at the, but we called the trusted friend, and he just said, you know, it sounds, he said, just tell Stan to go out in the backyard barefoot, put his hands and feet in the grass, and ground himself. I'm thinking, hey, you know, we'll try anything at this point. So Stan's in there on all fours out the backyard, and here it is. Like I said, 6 weeks later, you saw it for yourself. That grass will not grow back anytime soon. It is burnt down to the soil. There's still two footprints and two handprints where the grass used to be. And so the same thing. It's like I never would have believed these types of things were possible.
And this is important to bring up because Stan brought out the pillow to me, so I saw that firsthand, and you were there as well. And then I went outside and I saw his feet and hand marks burnt into the grass, and it's been weeks and nothing's grown back. But I don't think you were there at a later time. I was sitting there and he's like, dude, feel this. I can't remember exactly what he said, but he's like, dude, you know, something, feel this. And he's put his hand on me and it was hot. Like, I mean, there's no way you could, like, I don't care if he had his hand on a friggin' heater and then went to go and touch me. You could feel it coming from him, and Sol didn't touch it, but Sol touched up my arm a bit and she could feel the heat going through me up to her and even coming from him. And wow, that's when I started to talk to him, and he said like something about Qigong, and he didn't know I did Qigong. And it's like, now we still don't know exactly what's going on, but there's definitely something energetic coming from Stan, and that's going on because seeing the pillow burnt, seeing like his handprint burnt into the friggin' pillow, like it's just crazy. I don't know. There's no other way it could be done. That I've tried analyzing that 10 ways from Sunday, and I just go, I don't know. Like, you can't do it with a lighter. You can't, you know what I mean? You just can't do that.
No, he's experienced the hot hands before. And, you know, my girlfriend teaches meditation. I asked her, I said, have you ever heard of such a thing? And she said, yes, I've heard of people being able to heat things up, but never heard of someone injuring themselves the way Stan did. And then, you know, you saw for yourself, I found that you know, heavy metal spoon in the street. And I never really asked Stan to do it before. I mean, I have, he just didn't want to. He said he's tried to, you know, the point here is that I've seen countless utensils just literally melt in his hands, not deliberately. He's usually not even aware he's done it. He'll be sitting there eating with a plastic fork or a metal fork or spoon. And
I did film that. It's like, I filmed it and it was like, he said, you know, I just can't do it, you know, on demand. And we understood that. I know that more than anything. You know, especially when you know the crafts are about us, you can't call them up. It's sort of like the intention. But 2-3 seconds later, I've clicked the camera back on because we're all sitting there noticing that the frigging spoon is bending. Right. Now, just for the viewers and listeners, I went out with Lisa and Sol for, it was some noodles. It might have been like China. It wasn't Chinese, but it was something like that. And it's funny because Lisa's like, we better go because we're sitting there eating and Stan didn't even notice. It's like as if he's noticed and Lisa's noticed because he's starting to try and keep eating with the fork or the spoon and the thing's friggin' bent. And we're like, shit, we better go because he's just bent it. And we saw numerous things with you guys. Like, there's a wooden spoon where it's like a fork at the end, and a part of that is, you know, they're bent in different directions. There was what to me was the most amazing one out of the whole lot was the plastic forks. There is no way you could heat them up and do, like, they've basically curled within themselves, haven't they?
And most of the forks that you saw, I personally witnessed just literally melting in his hands. In one instance, he was seated across from me out in the backyard and eating, and he just said, Michael, look. He actually noticed it himself, and the thing was bent, and I just said, I want to tell you, go get another one. And it was a, you know, cheap little plastic fork. So he goes back in the house, gets another one. I watched him this. But this time, the second time, I was kind of keeping my eye on him and watching him. And, you know, within a minute after he got the second fork, I mean, I watched it just literally melt in his hands. We had a house guest over, and Stan had all the symptoms. You know, he's got hypoglycemia. And so sometimes he gets a little shaky and he doesn't feel well. I noticed that's when the bending, the melting seems to happen. And so I pointed out to our guest, I said, keep your eye on Stan. And he's sitting there, you know, shaking and eating and talking to our guest. And I looked, you know, just glancing over. I said, Polly, look. And she watched. And that was probably the more dramatic one that you saw. That's where it melted in front and curled around the back of his hand. And so, you know, there were multiple witnesses on that occasion. And it's funny you brought up the wooden spoon, because that was actually a gag gift for his birthday, I believe. And it said, you know, it was written on the handle, you know, here's a spoon you can't bend, or here's a fork you can't bend, or something like that. And so, you know, haha, we all had a good laugh. And that that wooden spoon, you know, cut into the shape of a fork, sat up on top of the refrigerator with a little bow tied around it. And it was a going joke. And then, you know, Stan would pick it up and look at it, and we'd have a laugh. And then one day he grabbed it, and the tines, you know, that were straight just kind of went, you know, you saw it. And it just happened like that. Didn't try. And then the shaft was a little warped as well. Probably the more impressive one was the screwdriver, because it's one thing to bend the shaft of the screwdriver, but the handle itself is a very thick, hard plastic. And that, you know, was warped. I'd be hard-pressed to explain how that could be possible, but...
Definitely, and you passed me that and I had a look at that. And what I found fascinating also was, now I know of Uri Geller, and he's even spoken before, Uri, where he sort of does that, and it's right. Almost like the metal becomes like plastic for a second, and he's only got a few seconds to do whatever with it, you know, or however it happens. With right. Stan, it doesn't seem to be the same as that. He doesn't know how to do it. He doesn't know when it's going to happen. And when it happens, it tends to do it without even him. He's not directing it. It just does it. It does it whatever right. direction it's going to go in. And I witnessed it. I think it was... So the time when I was sitting down with you, and then the time at the restaurant in front of us, you know, and especially the heat coming off at him at the other time, that was just friggin'... I've experienced it, but that was intense. Like, that yeah. was... Something
like I haven't seen anything like this since I came across, and your viewers might be familiar with the John Hutchison. Have you ever heard of the Hutchison effect?
Yes, yes.
Yes. Yeah, I contacted him just to ask if he'd ever heard of anybody being able to do this with their bare hands, and he said yes, you know, this is what it's called. I don't remember the name of it, so I did a little research on it, but the only other time I've ever seen any video footage of these kinds of events, you know, I think one time Stan just broke a key, the key just broke off, you know, just by holding it. So, who knows?
It's one of those fascinating things. In saying that, we did have you on a couple of shows back about some of the stuff going on at the moment, and I know that we can't go into certain things to do with court and all that, but you've experienced, you know, would you say surveillance type activity on the home? Like, I was there when the black helicopters flew over. And film that, you know, like, and it was funny because I filmed basically, I was saying to Stan, we've got the same, but they're one window shorter, and it's exactly what I filmed here yesterday with Sol over the home. But what's been some of the things that you just go, this is just friggin' weird in terms of maybe surveillance, not saying it's government or we don't know who in some circumstances. Sometimes I know that what's been government for me has been that, but other times it's like, well, it could have been, you know, anything, but it's just friggin' weird. But what's some of the things that you've experienced that sort of brought a different spin to this reality to you?
Well, as far as the surveillance, you know, break-ins are fairly common, you know, within months of moving in here. You know, Stan, Lisa, and I would go out to the mountains or go out for dinner and come home, and the front door's open. You know, they're very careful to lock the doors after everything they've been through, so we were certain the doors are locked, and that's happened on several occasions. Stan called me while I was at work one day and just said, did you come to the house? Are you at home? Or, you know, he came home basically to the garage door open and somebody walking around the back arch, and we discovered later that he had run a separate coax cable from the cable box to the side of the house. It was the dead of winter and, you know, snow everywhere. So we followed the footprints all over the house, and sure enough, somebody had run another coax cable to a modem and router combo. And it really shoddy job. You know, they took some electrical conduit on the side of the house and used that to power this modem router, tied it off in a plastic grocery bag and stuck it in the corner of the yard so we couldn't see it. But the theory is that they were trying to clone the modem in the house. But very, very poor work. So this doesn't seem like, you know, high grade. You know, I I'd be hard pressed to believe that this was a military operation.
Well, that's what I've thought about with some of these too. Like, I know that there is some military type stuff going on with Stan. You know, that's, you know, a definite, and there's evidence for that. But then at the same time, like, and Lisa agreed and Stan agreed too. It was like some of this is either black ops with another black ops agency with crap funding. Because I know for a fact, through, like, even my dad when he was a police officer, going back to year 2000 technology, some of the stuff they could do in the year 2000 was absolutely frigging amazing in terms of surveillance. So obviously, the good surveillance, and obviously everything's being monitored that's being done in that house all the time, just like here, I know that, that's a given, and it doesn't need sort of wiretapping or anything to do that. They can do that through whatever means they've got available to them. But it makes you wonder about who and what's doing this other stuff in terms of whether it's debuggings, because good bugs don't really exist anymore in terms of the ones that can be found. They're very microscopic or, you know, very high tech.
Right.
But it sort of brings in another question to who and what and why would people be using these other types of technology. Have you got any ideas on what may be behind, not saying it's a definite, but maybe behind some of this sort of stuff?
As far as the surveillance?
Yeah, some of the surveillance and break-ins.
Oh, I haven't a clue. I could speculate all day as to who this is. There's, I can say that, you know, Stan and one of his friends went, I don't know, to a movie or something like that one day, and they were followed by a police officer at every turn for quite some time. So I could theorize that, you know, maybe the local police department has something to do with all of this. I believe Stan and Lisa said they've had run-ins with other paranormal investigation groups in the past. But again, that's all speculation. It's anyone's guess who's doing this. But even with the shoddy work, we would need some funding to pull some of this off. I personally witnessed Stan's laptop being remotely controlled. And I repair computers for a living, so I did a very thorough virus scan, and we checked for rootkits, all kinds of malware, multiple programs, getting a second, third, fourth opinion. And I found traces of what was probably previous infections, but they didn't seem like they were active viruses. Either way, those were removed, and, you know, within weeks, Stan's not allowed to use the internet at this time, so he keeps the Wi-Fi disabled, not just at a software level, but at a hardware level as well. Just there's no he came up the stairs. He was, I don't know, looking through his own files or something like that. And whoever was able to do this managed to somehow turn the Wi-Fi back on and gain remote control of it. And they were quick. I would have a hard time navigating a computer this quickly, opening files. Opening programs, just flipping through files. Probably whoever's on the other end must have been taking screenshots. I mean, you just couldn't read this quickly. There were a few of us in the house, and we witnessed it. And I said, it's like, okay, I believe you. I'm gonna shut the damn thing off. So there is a high tech aspect to this as well. So I suspect multiple groups, but again, that's speculation.
But this is important in terms of you experiencing this, and you being somebody that repairs computers and knows about computers, you witness this, and that's just you're hard pressed to understand how that could be done.
Absolutely. What we later determined after calling the manufacturer of the laptop was that it was we were going to update the BIOS was for whatever reason or another, and couldn't do it, and so called the manufacturer, gave them the motherboard's serial number, and asked if there was a way to, you know, update the BIOS manually, because what we were doing wasn't working. And they said that serial number does not match the motherboard that was sold on the receipt. So somehow in transition from the factory or wherever, it seems as if the motherboard had been switched out, but the serial number did not match the one on the invoice. So
that's trippy,
isn't it? So my suspicion is that there was a modification in BIOS that allowed a backdoor.
Would that take a lot of work to do, like a bit of time?
I wouldn't know how to do it, so for someone who knows what they're doing, probably not.
Yeah.
But it explained why, you know, the antivirus and anti-rootkit software wasn't detecting it. They're not going to detect those types of viruses. Now there's viruses that infect the circuitry of a hard drive and not the, you know, the firmware. Same thing, they go completely undetected, and the only way to remove it is to destroy it. So that's the kind of level. And in the article that I read recently, they said there's no one, you know, you would need a team of people with all the manuals for all the manufacturers of these hard drives to achieve something, a virus like this.
Now, that's pretty interesting. With the break-ins, when they've happened, have you noticed anything missing, whether it's your stands or Lisa's, or it's just there's been a break-in and it's just you left it sort of what the hell, because you can't see anything missing, you can't see any mess, or
right.
Is it basically you've just been broken into and it's like, why even break in if you're not going to do anything?
Exactly. I think it's almost seems like it's an intimidation factor. They want you to know they've been there. No, I know in the past they had problems with coming home and finding, you know, their files had been tossed and things missing. But not since I've lived here, no, there hasn't. It doesn't appear as though anything was taken. It's more like they just want you to know that they were there. So if they did rummage through files or things like that, they did a good job of cleaning up after them. But we've never noticed anything missing. I told you the story about, you know, Stan and Lisa going to the airport. They locked their car. Lisa tucks her purse underneath the seat like she always does. Came back, and her purse was on top of the seat, opened, and it was very clear that somebody had been through it. With no cash, no credit cards, nothing was taken. So, again, it's anyone's guess, but it seems like it was a way of just saying, yeah, we can get in your car, too.
It's just, you know, it just adds to the testimony and things to the Romanet case, even though there's been a lot of controversy around Stan lately and what's going on and stuff we can't talk about, that, as you even said in the last couple of shows ago, that you would not be hanging around them if any of that had any validation to it. You know them, you've hanged around them, you know they're you're basically a character reference to them. And I've known Stan and Lisa for a while and you know, finally got to meet them in person. And I can definitely say the same. It is funny, but the amount of activity that I did witness there, like as soon as we got there and you came down the stairs after there was a conversation Stan, I, and Lisa and Sol Reed were having, and you've gone, have you turned the tap on? I just used that bathroom. I know that tap because I'd never used a tap like that before. But I know it was turned off. I've got OCD, so I'm always precise about how I do things. And the tap, you sort of literally have to grab by the head and pull up and up to turn on, and then, you know, the opposite to turn off. So however that was turned on, it's not like something that could be turned. And if it was pressure, well, I don't think pressure could even do that because it's very hard with that. But I've witnessed a lot of shadow men in the house. There was an incident where we were playing cards and Stan and me are basically sitting next to each other watching the activity. I originally noticed it, and then he started going, oh, yeah, I see what you're talking about. We saw lots of flashes of light in the house. You know, lots of wispy stuff. So we experienced that. And then again, the black helicopters... a couple of times flying over the home. Does that seem to be like as you said, this sort of goes in waves there. There'll be times where you're experiencing stuff, you know, you've talked about the shadow men type aspect and the taps before. Has that sort of been a common thing just to let you know you think that they're about, whatever they are to you?
You know, you're right. It does come in waves and I'm sorry. What was your question?
Or is it like something that you've witnessed that on a common occurrence, these shadow men and
the taps and that sort of stuff? No, the shadows that we saw weeks ago was a first for me. You know, Stan and Lisa have photos from years past were very good photos. They've had instances where they've literally chased these beings around the house. No, for me, it seemed like it was a very subtle visitation this time around by comparison. And the things like the water turning on, you know, they're subtle, but it's kind of a little way of, this is my impression, that it's a way of saying, hi, we're here. You know, and everything that I've experienced has been very playful. Sometimes it's stressful, but it's never been malicious.
It is different like, I've still got photos and stuff to go through, because there was one time in the lounge room we were all watching this black mass. It was different from the normal sort of, not that anything's, you know, it really is normal, but it's not. But it was different from the black shadows that I'm used to. And this thing, it was like you had to sort of see it in your peripheral vision, then you could see it spot head on for a second, and you could see it was going to another area, but you couldn't see it. That's why we're taking photos. So I've still got stuff to go over. But one thing I'd like to ask, and this is just from personal experience, I know with some people that visit the home, some people will experience nothing. People, when they've stayed with us a few weeks at a time, it's like after a few days or a week, the beings have got used to them, and then they'll see something, they'll be like, geez, now I know what you're talking about. I saw this, you know, I can't believe what I saw. Has it been something where Stan and sometimes maybe Lisa, do they tend to see things that you don't see, and then occasionally you will see these types of things? Or is it, you know, something where you'll all see it at the same time? I guess what I'm trying to say is there's stuff that Stan's telling you that he sees that you don't.
It happens from time to time.
Yeah. All right.
Sure, you know, he'll say, "Wow, did you see that?" It's like, "No, I didn't." And it's the same here. I've had my experiences where, you know, Stan and Lisa aren't even home, so there are things I've witnessed that they haven't seen. So no, we don't all see the same things. You know, I had a day job, and you know, things would happen while I'm at work. I'd come home and hear the story. It almost became a routine. I'd, you know, come home from work and say, "Oh, hey, what did I miss?" And most of the time, it's nothing. Every now and then, you know, say, "Oh, you know, we had so and so over, and X, Y, or Z happened." But no, we don't all see the same things.
That's an interesting point, but as Stan's made many times, is that a lot of this tends to happen when people are around and visiting, and you know, we definitely experienced that. Has there been sort of any major things that you can recall now talking to me that have happened when there's been a lot of people around in the home?
Yeah, we had a, like I said, a house guest from where is she from? Tennessee, I believe. Tennessee. She got to experience a few things, and there was one day where I wasn't present, but apparently some neighbors came over to visit, and they were all sitting in the backyard talking about UFOs, as a matter of fact. And you know, everyone in the house was outside, and they heard a loud crash in the house, and somebody came to investigate, and you know, three of the four kitchen stools were knocked over. So that's a classic example. We had guests from out of town and out of state. One night they wanted to set up the video camera. We captured an interesting EVP. They got to witness one of the chairs in the dining room, one of the larger chairs. The interesting thing about that was that there was no sound. You know, same thing. Everyone was out in the backyard talking, and you know, we come in to see one of these large chairs tipped over on its backside. I believe there was an electrical charging adapter on the table, and you know, a few of them witnessed it slide right off the table and fall off. You know, little things, but again, more or less, just kind of putting on a show for guests is the best way I could put it.
One thing I want to add here that I'm just remembering too is, didn't Stan have to get a couple of sets of silverware for Lisa because they were...
She gets so upset, and she knows it's not his fault. He can't help this, but yeah, I mean, there's been times where, you know, Stan will melt a knife or a fork or something, and it's like, Lisa, she gets so upset. He'll go out in the garage, put it in the vise, and straighten it back out as best he can, hope she doesn't notice. There's other times where he just doesn't know he's done it at all, and he just puts it in the dishwasher, and then, you know, we do the dishes later, and we find out there's this bent spoon, and it's like the same thing, you know. So yeah, for Christmas, Lisa got a brand new set of silverware, and we, you know, joke that Stan has to use the old set so that he doesn't mess up the new one. But I think he's bent a few of the new ones already, but yeah, we asked Lisa, and you're right, there were two sets. There was a funny thing, another friend gave Lisa a set of silverware for Christmas as well, so she got to pick which one she wanted to keep.
Well, it's been one of those things that, you know, again, like you said, you can't help with that, but I seeing and being at the Romanek's place and with you being there, I can see how you've sort of bought a different aspect than the other Michael too there for a while, in terms of, I guess, distraction in a good way to being, you know, around them with what's going on for them, because there's been a lot happening for them. It's like you guys have been a breath of fresh air, and it was awesome to absolutely, you know, had that couple of days. We wish we had more time, which we're looking at getting back there next year. But I just hope for everyone's sake this gets over soon, because not only, you know, is it a stressful time for them and they don't deserve what they're going through, but there's also more stuff going on that I hope one day, like Stan said, to see the light of day. And even just little things like one of the latest videos of at the Watchtower camping, and you can see these balls of light everyone was seeing. And right. I don't know how big they were, but these things were freaking everywhere. Just little things like this to add to the case and ongoing experiences, I feel are important. But unfortunately, Stan can't use the internet at the moment or anything like that. But there is lots of stuff going on behind the scenes continuously, isn't there?
Yeah. The activity certainly has not stopped. The story's not over. Stan's, you know, whatever he's going through is not over. He's been told. You know, things will change. But what that means is anyone's guess. But I agree. I think if you or I, you know, were to go through something like this level of intensity, I would certainly want, you know, good people around and have a support group. You know, Stan's very, very fortunate to have Lisa in all this. Like I said, she's very grounding in all this. But you're right that, you know, having the types of friends that they have, you know, being present, staying in the home, sometimes for weeks or months at a time, is very comforting. The energy is just completely different. There are other times where, you know, even with all of us here, it's still stressful.
So it has affected you on other ways, because it must be hard that there's stuff, you know, you can't do anything about this yet. You've got to sort of sit on the sidelines and watch this, and all you can do is give support, really, eh?
Yeah, that's all I can do. I try to you know. Yeah, exactly. Be a support for them when these things happen, good or bad. I'd like to think I've been of some help, but you know, what they're going through, they're going to go through whether I'm living here or not. And,
yeah. What's some of the stuff that's, has it led you to any certain areas of research experiencing this as you've been opened up to these experiences? Have there been things that you've tend to go and research that you wouldn't have otherwise and led you on your own journey in a different direction rather than where you're going?
Well, sure. If you take the meditation experience, for example, I never would have believed these things are possible. So I'm sure I went straight to the internet and looked up, has anyone ever, burned themselves or set themselves on fire while meditating? I was familiar with a video of a Qigong master, you know, lighting paper on fire and things like that. You know, I don't know whether to believe it's true. You can manipulate video pretty easily, but I really couldn't find anything. So yeah, that's definitely one example. Nothing else comes to the top of my head right now, but that certainly opened me up to, hey, you know, is this something other people experience? What's behind this? Kind of came across, I looked a little bit into Kundalini, you know, hoping maybe there was some explanation there. I haven't really found any answers. My interest didn't really develop much more than that. So yes and no. There are some things where it's just like I don't know that I'm going to even find the information. But like I said, certainly it opened my mind to the possibility. But I think I was already pretty well open to things I could have never believed, you know, before having lived with them, because I read about, you know, the hybrid children and things like that, and I heard about these things in the past. But you know, there are multiple witnesses to these children, and then during a regression. Last year, I was fortunate enough to be invited to come and witness one of these hypnotic regressions with Stan. And, as we showed you, you know, Stan held his hand up to the camera, and we had one still frame of a little girl coming to the video. It was incredible, you know, big blue eyes, and definitely not human, whatever this was, but I don't see how I or Stan could have manipulated the video to do that. I mean, it's certainly possible, but I'm open, but I haven't really branched out as far as research. I'm just kind of living it at this point, and that's good enough for me.
But that is fascinating to bring this point up, where you showed me the video and the whole entire, like, everything on the screen in one flash, just for one frame, is this face. And then when you I guess you sort of manipulated to bring out the colors more and things, and you could see it was a little girl.
Right. Initially, it was very dark. In the past, during one regression, I know that the video camera was basically blacked out. I don't know for how many minutes, but it was just nothing but silence and black. And So when we saw this black frame, you know, we thought, oh, maybe they did the same thing again. But then we realized no time was really missing. It was just a black frame. We stopped it. It took us a while to pause it and get it on that frame. And so, yeah, we had to increase the brightness and the contrast. And in doing so, the saturation was just, you know, the face of this little girl almost looked clownish. So we pulled the saturation down to normal color, and it was very clearly a little girl with very large blue eyes.
That's amazing. And there are other things that people may or may not be aware about, where I think Stan's put his hand up again in the past, and three phones have basically been thrown into one room because they've rang during the regression, and they've had to get new phones for the girl's place because they basically, I don't know whether they melted or something inside, they've basically been buggered, like they're screwed. But
somehow they've
teleported from three different parts in the home, all to being in the closet, all from him putting up his hand. And he remarks at that time, everyone hears one of the phones or whatever the phones ring, and I think words to the effect of, sorry about the phone, something like that, and then they
find we may have damaged your phone. And so they didn't know this at the time, but once the regression was over and they went up to disperse, they discovered the phones were missing, and that's when they found them all lined up neatly. And the owner of the telephone said that they worked, but they worked improperly. So there's definitely some truth to that. So every time that he's held his hand up during his regression, something has happened. So like I said, we sat on this footage for quite some time, and we were there. We didn't need to go back and watch it, but when we finally did review it, it was interesting to see that still frame. It was nice. And what was interesting is it was that still frame, and him holding his hand up was in response to the last question, which was from me. And they said, we need to go. They said, last chance for question. I said, you keep saying Stan doesn't know who he is. Could you throw us a phone? And we all had a good laugh, and Stan helped. That's when he held his hand up to the camera, and they answered, and it was very vague, ambiguous, we've answered this before type of thing. If you've ever seen any of these regression videos, that's how some of the answers come across. And so it was a little frustrating, but, after reviewing the video later, it was like, okay, well, it's something. It doesn't really answer the question, but I guess you could imagine what that means.
It's interesting, too, to see Stan's reactions to his regressions like me about mine, especially with some people watching both, and they say there's very much commonalities. Like, I can agree with after seeing a snippet of one of Stan's where you can just tell through the persona and the actions it's not Stan, like people say with mine. But it's funny with the Orion and Elohim connection, but the reluctance in watching, because we spoke to Stan, and you were talking about some of the regressions, and he hasn't even bothered watching them. It's like, for me, it's even hard to watch some of my own stuff like that, because it's sort of freaked you out because it's not you, especially my family. So it was interesting to see that's also how it's affected Stan. You've seen that, haven't you, with him? It's sort of like, what? Oh, is that what they said in the regression? He's got no idea.
Yeah, he has no idea. I talk about it, I'll mention, they did say, this or that, and he says, when? And it's like, oh, that's right. He says he doesn't remember any of it, and I believe it, because you're right. It didn't come through as though it were him. He was number one articulate. With Stan's head injury, he hasn't been the most articulate person. He forgets words and stumbles, and it didn't come across as his language. It was hard to believe as I was sitting there. You talk about having your mind open to new things. It was interesting, and even when I watched the video, it's almost as if I wasn't there. I don't remember it, and a lot of people who've been there said the same thing. They said when they watch the video footage again, they don't recall, all these questions that were asked and the sequence of events. And they said Stan just has absolutely no memory of it whatsoever. And so we have to, be the ones to tell him, what did they say. What advice did they give him, or the people present in the room? It's definitely interesting. And you said you had the same,
if you go and watch the regression with Mary Rodwell, a lot of people have remarked about halfway through, you can see my body clinch, and I just go completely different. And all I can say is it's like something pops in my chest, and I just sit up, and I'm... You go and watch it yourself and tell me what you think, because... John Sample and I forget the other bloke's name. I apologise. Who worked on Stan's Who worked on Stan's doco. They put up my documentary next to Stan's on the website next to the trailer on their J3 Films one.
Right.
Because there's very much an overlap in terms of information, experiences and evidence. And also it goes into the regressions as well. And the voice and everything, it's very similar. So it's been hard for me to watch anything of Stan's like that. There was a Mexican one I saw a few minutes of because I was just like, this is freaking me out. You'd swear that the same entities speaking through Stan was speaking through me. And I wasn't aware of this until it was brought to my attention. And I'm just like, that's friggin' freaky. And, you know, like they said, for us to, one, me to be in Australia and Stan to be in America, you know, 16 hours of flying apart, it's quite amazing that I'm filming similar stuff. And, you know, you saw what it was like when we were together as well. There was just this weirdness in terms of it's, you know, very similar stuff. And nothing was surprising, I think, on either end. But it was fascinating just to experience. You know, a lot of people might experience one or two things. We experienced a handful of things there in that short amount of time, which is what happens. And we weren't worried about the crafts or anything else. It was just there to go and visit and support. And we just happened to meet you at the same time, which was absolutely awesome.
Oh, yeah. The feeling's mutual. And you're right. There was no surprise. I guess the surprise was how much, the sheer quantity of similarities between, you know, after you left, you know, just like, wow, this is amazing. It's like, it's surprising, not surprising to a point, but the real surprise was just how many similarities there were, even with just the personalities, not just your experiences, but the personalities, there was that feeling of a very special bond. And it was almost as if, you know, it was meant to be. And you mentioned there was a kind of a delay in your visit, and there was a feeling that the timing was perfect, and it was probably a good thing that your visit was delayed, because this was the perfect time for you to come to Colorado.
Yeah, it was, and I've got to say, while I'm doing this, the American people, like, we hear a lot overseas about, you know, it's like as if they just want to put guns and shootings and things on the news, but I'll tell you what, the American people were so lovely. Everywhere I went, people were willing to help and talk, and up at James's ranch, that area was beautiful, and Colorado was just as beautiful to see the pine trees and the animals and the snow-capped mountains. It was just absolutely amazing. A lot of people that visit America go to, you know, LA or New York. I wanted to get the hell out of LA, and once I got out of LA, it was just beautiful. So, you know, just to the American people that I saw, I absolutely had a ball, and I recommend it to anyone. And we will be back there hopefully this time next year. And get to the Romanex, and hopefully, you know, you're in the neck of the woods as well.
Oh, I'll if I can, you know, if there's a chance to meet you in Sorita again, I would love it. I will, you know, bend over backwards to meet you no matter where I am.
Nah, fantastic, and we'll do the same. If we're able to do it, we'll definitely tee up. Michael, we'll wrap it up there. Thank you for, you know, talking to myself, and I know the viewers and listeners would have absorbed and been fascinated with what you've had to say and just your take on things and what you've experienced. It's very much appreciated, and we'll keep in contact, mate.
I hope so. I appreciate you having me on the show. This is a pleasure.
Thank you very much. We're up and up there, mate, and thank you. Cheers.
Cheers.